Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with your host tonight, Hugh, and myself, Elaine. Tonight on Orange Ribbon, our guest is DJ Bika, a self-proclaimed Bogasian or of Chinese descent. She's recently moved from Sydney to Melbourne and joins us tonight to talk about identity, the art of covering furniture with plastic, potato kings, Miss Concubine parties, and a DJ career. Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. Tonight in the studio we have Hugh. How are you, Hugh?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I've been a bit off today.
Have you? Yeah. Yes. I've had a bit of a sore throat today, but we're fine. We're on Orange Ribbon, so we're all fine now.
Yes, we're all good. We had a bit of a glass of brandy before coming. Anyway, our guest in the studio tonight is Bika.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Bika is from... Well, we're going to talk about this in a minute. So you're from a lot of different places.
One of them being Sydney.
But Hugh, you wanted to mention something before?
Oh, yes. On the desk tonight, we've got our faithful old Nick on the phones, but he's training a new volunteer on the front desk called Jerry. So welcome to Orange Ribbon, Jerry.
Welcome, Jerry. We love volunteers here at Joy, so if you want to volunteer, just
always good to have a new volunteer at Joy.
That's right. So, Bika, let's talk about you.
Yes, where do you start?
So, where were you born?
Born in Sydney. My parents are actually from overseas. My mum was born in Papua New Guinea, and my dad was born in Hong Kong. And basically, they came out here during the war, World War II. Mum was born in Rabaul, and during that time, during the war...
Where is that, sorry?
In Papua New Guinea.
Yeah. Okay.
During that time, World War II broke out, and Rabaul was taken over by the Japanese, so they had to flee into the jungle, where they lived for a bit before, you know, being picked up by the Australian troops and shipped out to Australia. Yeah.
So what year did they come over?
Ooh, I'm not really sure about, like, you know, exact dates in terms of years, but it would have been maybe, well, just not around the 40s.
During the end of the
end of the war,
So what type of upbringing did you have with your parents? One from Papua New Guinea and one from Hong Kong?
Yeah, I've been actually pretty fortunate. Like, I know a lot of other Asian families have worked quite differently from how my family worked. Like, my family, they basically came out here, so became pretty westernised. Mm-hmm. And so, unlike, you know, other Asian families where, you know, there was that pressure of, like, having to, you know, go into a life of accountancy or being a doctor or, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. My parents were actually really quite supportive, you know, like my brother and sister are also creative souls, like, you know, my brother's an actor and my sister's a graphic designer and also I'm a DJ musician. My parents have always really encouraged that as well. Mm. They've never, you know...
So there wasn't a status pressure when...
No, not really. I mean, there was a time where they're like, oh, you know, when are you going to find yourself a real job? But they've never, like, you know, pressured, you know, you got to do this. Like, I know, like, I've had some Asian friends who are very... you know, have had parents who have come down hard to, you know, go to uni and...
Be a doctor, be an accountant.
Yeah, exactly.
Lawyer.
And that's that is that pressure on the...
And going back a step, does the story of the war and their experience during the war, how did that affect your upbringing? Because I know that my parents have lived through the Second World War and my dad has had pretty bad experiences.
Sure.
And when we were growing up, we constantly had stories about the wars and he's very obsessed about the Second World War and, you know, war films and the Holocaust. And so that was sort of... he wanted to make sure that we were reminded of what it was like and, you know, the sort of conditions they had to live in. Is it something that...
Yeah, my mum, especially, my mum and dad do quite, you know, tell us kids a lot about that, about their experiences growing up and how lucky we are. And we are lucky, I do, you know, and really thank God for that. You know, they lived through some really tough times, you know, like for toilet paper, my dad had to use, like, hay... because they didn't have toilet paper. And, you know, and my mum would talk about, like, you know, my mum's quite obsessed about storing food because I think, and, you know, feeding us kids and making sure we have enough to eat on our plate and stuff because I think that she's worried that, you know, the Great Depression or something or some other thing will come along which, you know...
Which will plunge a country into the center.
Yeah. So
especially if she's lived through that. And
she has,
and struggled for foods in the past. So.
They did. Like, she when they were living in the jungle, it was a pretty hard... you know, life for her, and you know, there was always that fear of being caught by the Japanese, and so, you know.
There's something that never leaves you, really, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, it's something that, you know, she's often talks about all the time.
Now, your two parents come from different countries.
Yes.
What language does your mother speak?
My mother speaks a dialect of Chinese called Siap.
Okay.
It's
And your father?
My dad speaks Mandarin.
And you?
And he speaks, and I speak English.
Oh, okay. So you don't...
I'm pretty terrible with my Chinese, everyone knows that. I'm pretty terrible.
We'll speak about this in a minute. So you're listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Orange Ribbon, Joy 94.9's multicultural program with Aline and Hugh. And our guest tonight is Brika.
Brika.
I told you I'd say the name.
Well, let's talk about the name Brika then.
No, let's talk about the music.
Okay.
Okay, well, that track... I'm just getting over that Brika thing. That track was called Dirtbox. Dirtbox, and it was by an artist called Gutter Styles, who is also a.k.a. Bruce Asher, who's a UK producer. He's on the Bedrock label, which is John Digweed and Nick Murr's label.
John Digweed.
So really nice progressive house groover there. So, yeah.
So you picked all the music for tonight.
I did indeed, yeah.
Great. Let's go a little bit back to what we were talking about before.
And the languages that you don't speak. So you are so you're of Chinese descent and you don't speak Chinese. Please explain.
Yeah, I did try and send me to Chinese school when I was, like, you know, a wee kid, but I didn't really pay much attention, and I really regret it now because I really wish I did actually pay attention. But at the time, you know, try and tell a 5-6-year-old that, you know, go into school and, you know, when they'd rather be out in the sun playing.
So what did your parents speak at home? You didn't
Well, no,
Chinese,
that's the other thing. They sent me to Chinese school and then they never spoke it at home. So it'd be still like, you know, pass the sugar, love, you know. Yeah. So
how old were your parents when they came to Australia?
Mum was about 6 Dad was 16. He came a bit later.
So they were very young to pick up the language and actually just feel
comfortable. Well, Mum actually picked up, you wouldn't even, like, if you spoke to her right now, you would think she's white. Like, she just does not sound with any accent.
No.
Yeah, like, she's got no accent whatsoever. Dad is a little bit, you know, you can tell.
Yeah.
But he's still really good at his English. Mm. Okay. But, I do regret not being able to...
So your Mandarin is a little bit...
A shocker. Yes,
and,
yes.
You told me a story the other day about... you said something that wasn't quite appropriate. What was that?
Oh.
You called somebody...
Because, like, I can't get the tones right. Like, in Chinese, like, they're, you know, you can say the same word 4 different times. Mm. If you get the tone wrong, then you could be asking for, you know...
The wrong thing.
And, you know, I love dumplings. I love prawn dumplings. And in Chinese, you say hargol. Although, I really apologise for the Asian listeners out there, I'm probably saying it really, really wrong. But it's hargol. But if you don't say the goal right, you could be asking for prawn dog. So I've often gone into Chinatown going, I'll have half a dozen hargol. And they're just looking at me, like, really strangely, you know, like, what's she on,
she's,
you know?
She's an Asian imposter.
Yeah,
do people give you a hard time because of this? Because they look at you, you're
Asian. You guys are giving me a hard time about this. So, yeah,
no, but does the Asian community give you a hard time?
No, not too badly. I mean, just more like my aunties and uncles who, you know, think I should know how to speak it, which I should.
Yeah.
But
have you ever thought about going to school and taking it up again?
I have thought about it. I think it's a language that would be really hard to pick up, though, because of all the different tones you've got to get right. I think it'd be really hard, you know, as you're older to pick it up.
Does your brother or sister speak the language?
My brother has actually learnt it because he's had to do that with some of his roles that he's done. So
he puts you to shame.
He puts me, they both put me to shame.
How Chinese do you feel?
How Chinese do I feel?
Yes.
I'm looking at myself right now in the mirror and I'm feeling very Chinese.
No, because you took a quiz recently.
Oh, yeah, that
which
quiz,
was a,
yes.
How Asian are you quiz? Mm. So I want to know more about that.
Oh, it was just one of those, you know, those internet quizzes that people send around just to find out how Asian you are. And I did really shockingly. There was two quizzes, actually. There was a test to see how Bogan you are, and there was a test to see how Asian you are. And it worked out that I was actually more Bogan than Asian.
So what are you?
I call myself Bogasian with a Y because I'm Bogan, Asian, and gay. So, yeah, that was interesting.
But that's an interesting issue, I guess, is, you know, because especially with, I guess, whether if you're African or you're Asian and your physical traits tells the world that you are something Caucasian. Mm. And that's how people perceive you, and but you might not feel it at all. I mean, I look for some people North African. I've never been to North Africa. I don't know anything.
Well, you are fairly dark-skinned.
I am fairly dark-skinned.
Yes.
And, you know, being born in France, people assume that I'm North African.
And now, you don't sound French.
And I don't have any affinity to North Africa whatsoever. But, you know, it's a way of alienating people in a sense that when you... you know, I'm French as far as I know. Yes. I'm French, and that's all I am. But for other people, I'm not. And for French people, a lot of the time, they struggle with the idea that you are French because you don't look like the standard stereotypes, typical French, which now is a bit of a joke because you've got so many people with, you know, different colours and different backgrounds and whatever.
Yeah. You know, back actually when I was growing up, I actually shunned a lot of my, you know, in my Chinese culture and that because, you know, I used to get picked on at school for being Asian. So, you know, once you've been picked on enough, it starts to do stuff to your head. Mm. And this is another reason why I do the Miss Concubine parties too, because it's a way of celebrating. Now I've come to know who I am and be proud of who I am, and there's nothing wrong with being Asian. But for many years, I did feel, you know...
So did you reject it for a while?
I did.
As you possibly could?
Yeah. I did when I was growing up as a teenager. I really did, and, you know, I didn't want to have a part of it. And as I grew older, I realised, you know, that's crap.
Yeah, you start embracing it again.
You do. You start embracing it. You know, get a bit wiser and realise, you know, no, that's...
When you came out as a lesbian, did that have any impact on the fact that you're Asian?
The fact that I was Asian?
Yeah. When you came out to your family and how did they react?
Well, they didn't react so badly with me because my brother's also gay, and he was the one that really got hammered. So they were a little bit lighter on me, like also being the daughter, I suppose.
So who came out first?
He came out, he's an older brother, and he came out first.
Right.
And initially my parents weren't too good about it, but now they're fantastic. They're really, really cool about it.
Right.
Really cool.
So you've got a few gay and lesbians in your family. It's not just your brother, is it?
Seems to run in our family.
Yes. So what's the percentage in your family? 50%?
Oh, I would say 50%. There's maybe, you know, 4 or 5.
And is everyone out?
Some, and there's other ones that we kind of go, you know how you go to a party and go, I'm sure they're gay. You know, if only they would come out.
Yes, and they would have quite an easy environment to come out in, I guess, because you're out and some of the siblings are out, so...
I don't know if it's necessarily easier because their parents, you know, a bit different. My parents were not too bad about it. Some of the other parents might be a bit more stricter.
Mm. What about your aunts and uncles and the extended family? How do they react to
They're actually really cool. Like, you know, I've taken my girlfriend back to family gatherings and they've been really cool about it. Mm. So... Mm. There's no drama with that.
And your sister, I mean, she's
in the middle. Yeah. She's a straight one, so...
She's a straight one.
How did she react to having a gay brother and a gay sister?
She didn't have a problem with it. I think it was a bit more like, you know...
Why aren't I gay?
I already figured that, do you know what I mean? Why aren't I gay, exactly. This is what you're missing out on. So, yeah,
I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about political incorrectness. Rice Queen... is one of the terms that is used,
rice
as we know,
queen.
Rice queen, guys who go out with Asian guys.
Yeah.
I've heard potato kings.
That's
the first time I heard that.
Oh, really?
Maybe I haven't
potato
been out. Potato kings.
I've heard of potato dykes.
You haven't heard potato. That's the same thing as what I thought
same
it was.
Same thing, yeah.
What's a potato king?
So, well, you're a potato. Caucasian. You're a potato.
Oh, right.
And apparently I'm couscous, so anyway, this is bad.
So a potato king is a white girl.
Is a, well, potato dyke is a, no, is an, it's an Asian lesbian who goes out with
I don't think
Caucasian.
You necessarily have to be Asian lesbian, I think you just have to be someone who likes...
Potatoes.
Yeah. I'm lost.
And it's the same the other way around with rice queens or rice dykes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it a rice king?
Are you a rice king, or...?
No, I don't know. I'm asking you.
am I a rice king?
No, she's a potato queen.
I'm a potato queen, no, but, you know...
We totally confuse each other now between the kings, the queens, the potatoes.
I don't mind delving a bit of rice now and then, though.
So that's what you're trying to do with the Miss Concubine parties that you've organised, is it? So it's a sort of
East meets West.
East.
East meets West.
West parties, which...
Tell us what actually happens at these parties. What do you organise?
Okay, I put on these parties called Miss Concubine. It is like, as Ali was saying, like an East meets West party. It's basically for girls who want to hear other sounds other than what's already going on in the scene, like more underground beats, like what you're hearing at the moment.
Okay.
But, you know, I try and inject a bit of my Asian flavour into it. So, like for some of the parties in the past, we've done things like like for our last party, we had like these shots called the Forbidden City shots, and they went really down really well with the girls. They really like that. And then we might have Asian sort of inspired shows or so. I want to keep it's really good because I'm trying to embrace my culture and want to share that with everyone. So I don't see myself as just like the promoter of the event. I sort of see myself as the host as well, because you know, I go around running around making sure, just like my mom, everybody's well fed, you know, everyone's looked after, because that's the way I was brought up. And you know, I want the parties where everyone feels really comfortable, you know, being there.
We'll talk about these parties a little bit later in a bit more details. And you're listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au. Or, if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Orange Ribbon, Joy Melbourne's native multicultural show. And our guest tonight is Vika. Vika, tell us a little bit about your music.
Well, I'm heavily into, like, underground beats, as you probably guess from the tracks you're listening to. I really love a lot of prog and tech and techno and, you know, and breaks. But I have, you know, obviously done gigs in the scene where, you know, more sort of mainstream type gigs. Like, I was just doing one of those last weekend, actually.
And the music we just played, what was that?
That was a track called Do What You Do. It was a Trent Moller remix by a group called Yoshimoto. Really love that track. It's one of my favourite tracks. A bit of an oldie, but couldn't resist putting it on here because I really dig it. So
what's your influence musically?
What's my influence? Oh, many influences. What, DJ-wise or just...
DJ, well, any influence really, because I think everything at the end, you know, sort of will sort of show, shows into your DJ.
Sure. Well, I've actually come from, like, a musical background in terms of, like, you know, I've been doing music ever since, you know, I was, like, about 14. Like, you know, I was playing, like, saxophone and in the school band, doing the jazz band, and, you know, and at the moment I'm learning drums, so, you know, I'm always sort of involved in music in some way, and love it.
Have you ever been part of a band?
I have, yeah. I have. We weren't very good.
What were you called?
Yellow Soul. That was the first band I did, like, when I was, like, 15, and it was really bad rock band.
Was it all Asians?
No. Actually, I didn't come up with that name, funnily enough. It's actually Soul as in Soul of the Foot.
Oh, okay.
My friend made that up, and...
Thought it was really smart.
Yeah, I thought it was smart, and it wasn't.
But you originally came from Sydney.
Yes.
And so you started your DJing and everything in Sydney. Mm-hmm. Give us a little bit about the scene in Sydney that you were on.
Scene in Sydney. I actually think it's quite different from Melbourne, I've noticed. In Sydney, it's all centred around the whole Oxford Street, Golden Mile, you know, King Street area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Melbourne, it's, like, quite fanned out into a lot of the suburbs.
Yeah.
And it's quite a mixed...
Yeah, Melbourne doesn't have a core gay area, really.
No, it doesn't really.
No.
It's spread out a bit everywhere, which I find great, really, because
that means
we're out there everywhere.
Mm. And it also means that, you know, there's more opportunities to go in different venues and people are open-minded for that. It's
more,
really good.
More mixed venues, you reckon, in Melbourne?
Mixed, as in gay, straight?
Yeah,
I think generally, definitely, even when you go to the straight venues in Melbourne, it's generally mixed as well.
Yeah.
In Sydney, it tends to be more segregated.
Yeah. What venues in Sydney, what type of venues did you DJ in?
I've done, like, you know, the bar gigs, like, you know, like the Columbian, and, you know, done some spots at Phoenix, and, you know...
I don't know the names of all the bars in the city, so these gay bars, straight bars.
Yeah, I was mentioning the gay bars.
Yes.
I've done some, like, you know, parties, like the Rubble parties, which is...
You've done sleaze, haven't you?
Done sleaze and Mardi Gras and, you know, various...
Is there a lot of lesbian bars in Sydney?
I wouldn't say they're lesbian bars. They're just like lesbian nights they have.
Okay.
Like, where we get to take over it for...
Right, for one night or two nights or something.
Or something, yeah.
Okay. Sounds interesting. What about Melbourne compared with Sydney?
Mm-hmm.
Does Melbourne have more lesbian bars?
You have a lot more diversity of nights.
Right.
You know, but I do think that there's actually something missing in the middle in terms of, like, on the one side you've got, like, the girls who go to, like, the more commercial sort of Ministry of Sound type, you know, kind of venues to hear that sort of style of music. Then you've got the more kind of indie kind of side, but there's nothing in between doing more the proggy techno side, I've noticed. Mm.
Okay, well, we'll come back to this. This is Joy 94.9. You're listening to Orange Ribbon.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. We have tonight Hugh in the studio and our guest from Sydney, who's now from Melbourne.
That's right.
DJ Beaker.
Hey, hey.
And myself, of course. Now, we were talking about the Sydney scene and the Miss Concubine parties that started. They started up there, right?
They started up there,
Did you actually create these nights in Sydney?
Yeah, and so when I came down to Melbourne, we thought, yeah, why? What the heck, let's put one down here as well. And it went really well, so...
Well, the party's just for lesbians or gay guys
as
well?
The parties were marketed to the girls.
Right.
And we don't, you know, encourage... it for the girls, but we're quite happy to accept boys coming along. You know, if the girls want to bring their boy mates, no problem. We've had boys at the Loop party.
Okay.
So, yeah, no drama. It's all about being inclusive, not exclusive, you know. So.
Yeah, that was a great night. Actually, Beaker organised one for the Midsummer.
Yes.
That was part of Midsummer program.
That was part of Midsummer, yeah.
And that was held in the city. And I expected more Asian girls, to tell you the truth, because of the actual...
Yeah.
You know,
we've got actually a stronger Asian support group in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the parties are new down here, you know, so
yeah.
It takes time and, you know.
But was it the focus, the East meets West for these parties, or was just a theme?
We're trying to keep the parties, like, you know, with the Asian theme, because for me it's kind of a bit of a cathartic experience to be able to put something on and, like, yeah, you know, let's push, give it a bit of an Asian flavour as well. So they're not just coming down... for the beats, but, you know, let's do something different, like put some, you know...
What do you reckon is missing?
From the music Melbourne scene or just...
Sydney scene, Melbourne scene?
I think, especially in the gay and lesbian scene, I think they really need to... we need more promoters and venues who are willing to sort of support new types of music as well and take the risk, because it is a risk.
Mm.
But if you don't take the risk, then it gets stale.
Exactly, No, I totally agree, and it's funny the response that we got from Miss Concubine. I mean, I spoke to a lot of the girls, and they were saying, you know, how great it is to find that music finally, and, you know, where is it? Why isn't anybody putting that sort of music? And I think that's what it is. People are playing it safe.
Yeah. But they are playing it safe. But the most funniest thing about this music has been around and is around, and it's in your record store. You just have to look for it. And it's not hard. It's just got to get away from just buying the Ministry of Sound albums, you know. And look, it's there, you know.
How does a DJ gauge the crowd and play the music that they want on the night, any night?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there is, you know, a bit of crowd reading and stuff like that. It depends on the gig as well. Like when I go and see a DJ, I know what I'm expecting. So I don't kind of, like, go and see someone and expect them to play a certain style if that's not what they're doing. So I think it's also the punters as well, they have to sort of also respect that, not come to a space and kind of go, well, can you throw in this when...
Yeah, so requests are out, okay? Yeah. It's not a wedding. You don't go up to the DJ and go, can I play, can you play a sexual healing?
But
so when you go out, you go and see a DJ because you know where they're playing. Now, I'm sure there's some sort of gauging of the crowd, obviously.
But when they advertise a gig for the night, and they've got the name of the DJ there.
Mm.
Obviously, people say it's like a band playing, isn't it?
They
know that the music that band's going to play or sing, so they know the DJ. And do people follow you from gig to gig? Yeah,
yeah. I mean, you do get that element, and then you get some people who may not have heard of you, and they come in and they see you, and you know they're like, oh wow, you do this, and it's like, yeah, I've been doing that, and. It is like that. And I try, and when I go and see DJs, like I try and go there to. I want to go and see something and hear something new.
Mm.
I don't want to hear something old and tired. So, I quite like going to hear something I've never heard before.
So when you were in Sydney, obviously you established yourself on the clubs and pubs in Sydney.
Right.
Why did you come to Melbourne?
You know what? I just really needed a change. I felt like that moment in my life, I was feeling really, you know, I was over Sydney.
Mm.
I needed to get out.
And is that obviously the city or the music
city,
scene?
The city more, and I, you know, I was just sick of going to the same clubs and hanging out in the same places. There's only so many times you can go to a certain pub on Oxford Street before you get over it. And Melbourne is such a great city for someone like me who wants to be involved in the arts and the festivals. And you guys have got so much down here that it was like, oh my God, it's fantastic. I've been here many times, but never lived here.
How many years did you live in Sydney before
now?
Were you born in Sydney?
Yeah, I was born in Sydney. I pretty much lived there the whole time.
Yeah,
so, you know, coming down here was a breath of fresh air.
How easy was it then when you came to Melbourne to get DJing jobs in and around Melbourne? I mean...
Yeah, well, you know, I've got a residency down at Abode, which, you know, it's I've also come to the point in my life where I don't want to take stuff which I don't feel like musically it's really what I want to do.
Right.
So I'm being really selective on where I want to play. Because I've done my sort of time up in Sydney doing certain gigs I haven't really wanted to do, but done it because for the experience or for, you know. So I really, you know... There's not as many gigs doing this sort of style of music.
So when you came to Melbourne, did they know about you already, the people you went and spoke to?
I think I was pretty new to Melbourne. Like, you know, because you guys all got your local DJs and stuff. I don't have as much of a, you know, interstate profile. But, you know, I'm starting to, you know, get
But you must have one now. You must have one.
And I hope so, yeah.
having done Mardi Gras and Sleaze, is this something that you did because... They're big parties and they're great things to do, or is it something that musically you thought was a good thing?
Yeah, a bit of all that, and you know, who's going to turn down a Mardi Gras gig when they ask you? You know, you're not going to go, "Hey, I don't want to play in front of all you guys. Go away."
And so. Did you prefer Mardi Gras or Sleaze? Because I'm a Sleaze.
Oh,
I much prefer
look, they
Sleaze,
were both but, they were both good gigs. Mm. I don't currently say you know.
In terms of all these big parties, I went to the White Party just because I wanted to...
Sensation.
Sensation. Oh, okay. Just to see what these huge parties were all about. And I didn't really have a great, fantastic time because there's too many people who don't know what it was, whether it was a party or a footy match, or there's hamburger stands and there's... Oh, it's just all over the place. And the DJing was... these guys can't mix. Fête de Le Grand. anyway... it was an interesting experience, but you know, I think maybe as I get older, I prefer the smaller scene.
Yeah.
And is it something that you kind of empathise with? Or?
Yeah, I could totally empathise with that. You know, like a smaller, more intimate gig is definitely.
Do you think it's an age thing?
No, I don't think it's an age thing. No, I don't. I mean, it's just like for example, when I went and saw James Brown. Okay, this is a totally different thing. Seeing him at the Entertainment Centre is not as good as, like, if you saw him in a little sort of bar down the street or something. You know, it just loses its appeal, like it's too big. You know, when you have this DJ Tiesto in this massive, you know, hall, you know, you just, it doesn't have the same vibe.
Yeah, so what's for you now in Melbourne? Now you're in Melbourne. How long have you been here for?
Just over 12 months, so...
So what's on the calendar for you? What's coming up?
What's on the calendar for me? God. I want to put on, you know, a couple more parties.
Are we going to see more Miss Concubine?
Yeah, you will see
Is
more.
Is it going to be probably. Like a quarterly thing or a...
Probably once or twice a year thing.
Yeah.
It takes so much time and energy to put a party on.
Because you've got shows during the party as well, don't you?
Yeah, so. Yeah. There's a lot of organisation going towards, you know, putting on one of these things. So probably once or twice a year, especially with Melbourne weather. I don't know if I really want to put something
so
on during winter. So
what venues do you have the parties at?
Different venues.
Different
each
venues.
Time,
okay.
Yeah. We had it in Loop in this January's, and that was a great venue because it really allowed me to utilise the whole venue with its multi, you know, the screens.
The visuals and everything. You had all the mixing of sound, but the mixing of images as well, which was sort of added a completely different dimension.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic.
It's a fantastic venue to work in terms
of. So is it a mixed age group that go along there, or is there a sort of age group that sort of 20s
yeah,
or 30s or what?
It's it is a mixed age group. We had a lot of younger people there, but it's quite mixed and quite diverse in people that come as well.
Where do you advertise these parties?
Oh, word of mouth, email, girls' magazines.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you worked for the gay press as well, didn't you?
I did a couple of freelance articles for Lottl and stuff on a few years back, on different DJs like Lisa German and DJ Josh and Pride and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mainly more dance music.
Oh, so sort of music.
Yeah, everything
stuff,
I do is like to do with dance music because that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
So.
One question I'd love to ask you now. You don't have to answer this, but
oh, here we go. Where's the drink of water?
CDs are your tools, obviously.
Recently.
Yeah.
Recently.
No, I think you're going to pinch my question here.
How much would you spend on music in a month?
Well, now that I've been using CDs, which not much. Vinyl is quite expensive. I'm actually a vinyl DJ.
Okay.
And vinyl is about $20 a record.
Hmm.
So, vinyl or digital?
You know what? Many years ago, I would have said vinyl, but I really think, vinyl is a fantastic, medium, beautiful sound, love working with it. But I think you've got to move with the times and you've got to incorporate both. Otherwise, just get left behind. So
and also
I would say both.
The cost element is something.
Yeah, definitely the cost element.
Because you can download any track now for $1.69.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much music you can... And you don't have to, I've always been so old school, and get in the car, go to the record store. You save so much time now getting on the computer and just downloading it all.
Yeah.
So I would say both. I don't really want to say.
So a good chunk of your earnings goes on your tools, basically.
Yeah, a good chunk of it. Yeah.
So anyway, we can hear you on Saturday.
Yes,
because you've got a new residency at Abode in St Kilda. I'm sure people out there know where it is.
House of IQ,
great. And that's called House of IQ.
Yeah, we've just gone monthly now. That'll be the launch night on Saturday.
So every Saturday or every...
Every third Saturday
every
of
third
the month.
Saturday.
Yeah, come along. It's, it's going to be a great night and you'll get to hear very similar things that you heard today.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Be a good night.
We've come to the end of the show.
Oh.
I'm afraid.
Comes so quickly, doesn't it?
I know, it does. Well, that's Orange Ribbon for another week. Our special thanks to Mel for coming up and talking to us on Joy. Next, Paul and Simon from the Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us on Orange Ribbon tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insight into the GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thank you to Nick on reception and his help, who was
Jerry.
And that's it for tonight, for me.
And me, Hugh.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.